When I was a teacher in Non-Dalton back in the 1990s, I had students as young as second grade who had already taken their first big game animal. For most, it was a caribou, though I had a couple who had already bagged their first black bear, an animal a bit more common around the Lake Clark region than seems to be the case around Dillingham. And while it was a bit of a shock at the time, well, my home state of Kansas has, or used to have, a minimum age of 16 for big game hunting, I now realize that my initial view was somewhat narrow. Alaska has no such minimum age, and most kids grow up in homes in which hunting is stridently pursued. It would only make sense that the kids would eventually, very frequently sooner rather than later, fall in lockstep with the family practice. And in the 13 years I've now been in Dillingham, I've seen that to often be the case here as well. Hunting is important to the lifestyle, and in families that place a premium on it, the kids are indoctrinated at an early age. The same can also be said for fishing. Because of that, I'm going to level with you. Today's episode is very much going to be a preaching to the choir kind of thing. I know that many of you have already laid in a freezer full of salmon for the winter, and it's likely that many more have either added other types of game, such as moose, caribou, and birds, or you're still in the process of doing so. That said, it's also been my experience that folks who like to hunt and fish also enjoy talking hunting and fishing, so maybe today's episode will be well received. There is potentially something in it for you at the end. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Today I'd like to share some information about a couple of national-level events to be recognized this Saturday, one of which is the part that will amount to me preaching to you, the choir. Then, at the conclusion of this episode, I'd like to share with you an opportunity to spend a bit of your weekend time with Togiak Refuge, for those of you who will be in Dillingham on Saturday. Saturday is actually two national events. It's National Hunting and Fishing Day, and it's also National Public Lands Day, both of which have significance to Togiak National Wildlife Refuge and to residents across southwest Alaska. Let's go ahead and get started with the one that very much feels like preaching to the choir, National Hunting and Fishing Day. I am of two minds on the idea of a National Hunting and Fishing Day. On one hand, it's a very cool idea to have a day that recognizes these two fine pursuits, both of which are uber-critical to people around the Bristol Bay region, as well as being identified priorities for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So there is that. On the other hand, a part of me feels like, really? A single day? Around here we have another name for the idea of a hunting and fishing day. It's called daily living. But again, it's been my experience that most folks who enjoy hunting and fishing also enjoy talking about and hearing about those activities as well. So let me share with you how this came to be a recognized national-level event. A lot of folks like to trace the beginnings all the way back to Theodore Roosevelt, though official recognition for the day came many decades later. It is widely understood that over 100 years ago, hunters and anglers were the earliest, most vocal supporters of conservation efforts and scientific wildlife management. They were the first to recognize that rapid development and unregulated use of wildlife were threatening the future of many species. President Roosevelt was one of these people, which is why during his tenure in the White House, not only was the very first refuge created, but he managed to sign into being over 50 refuges before leaving the Oval Office. Led by folks like Roosevelt, these early conservationists called for the first laws restricting the commercial slaughter of wildlife, such as what happened with Pelican Island in Florida. They urged sustainable use of fish and game, created hunting and fishing license, and also lobbied for taxes on sporting equipment to provide funds for state conservation agencies. These actions laid down the foundation for what's been called the North American Wildlife Conservation Model, a science-based system that has led to some of the most successful conservation efforts of all time. An example very dear to my heart, pun intended, from my home state of Kansas is the successful reintroduction of the white-tailed deer to the state, which in the early to mid-1900s had been shot out of existence. A reintroduction effort led to a stable population that produced the first statewide hunting season in 1965. Today, Kansas is overrun with deer, as are many other states. In fact, the state of Texas alone has more deer in it than all of North America did back before the American Revolution. And that's just one example. success stories abound. But it wasn't just money and legislating changes. Sportsmen and women have worked countless hours to protect and improve millions of acres of vital habitat, benefiting wildlife and providing places for everyone to enjoy. In the 1960s, as science shed new light on how the natural world functioned, hunters and anglers embraced a higher level of environmental awareness, but were also discouraged that some didn't understand the role hunters and anglers played in the recovery and improvement of habitat and wildlife across the nation. To that end, National Hunting and Fishing Day came about. The first fellow to suggest an official day of thanks to sportsmen was a gun shop owner from Pennsylvania, Ira Joff. In 1970, Pennsylvania Governor Raymond Schaefer adopted Joff's idea and created what was billed as an Outdoor Sportsman's Day in the Keystone State. Less than a year later, Senator Thomas McIntyre of New Hampshire introduced Joint Resolution 117, authorizing National Hunting and Fishing Day on the fourth Saturday of every September. Representative Bob Sykes of Florida introduced an identical measure in the House of Representatives. In early 1972, Congress passed both bills by a unanimous vote. On May 2, 1972, President Nixon signed the first proclamation of National Hunting and Fishing Day. By late summer, all 50 states had joined in. National Hunting and Fishing Day continues to be celebrated the fourth Saturday of every September. It remains the most effective grassroots effort ever undertaken to promote the outdoor sports and conservation. The goal is simply to help spotlight the conservation accomplishments of sportsmen and women, something I think that we can all get behind. National Public Lands Day, the other event of the day, is celebrated annually at public lands in the United States on a Saturday in late September, which happens to be the 26th this year. It promotes both popular enjoyment of our country's public lands, as well as volunteer efforts on those lands to keep them clean. National Public Lands Day began in 1994 at three sites and included some 700 volunteers. It proved to be a big success and became a yearly tradition, most often held on the last Saturday of each September. Since that first day over 20 years ago, it's an event that's grown considerably. In fact, in recent years on this date, it's not uncommon for close to 200,000 volunteers and park visitors to celebrate at and on more than 2,100 public land sites in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. Last year, volunteers collected an estimated 23,000 pounds of invasive plants, a problem that's yet to hit Southwest Alaska. They built and maintained an estimated 1,500 miles of trails, planted an estimated 100,000 trees, shrubs, and other native plants, removed an estimated 500 tons of trash, and contributed an estimated $18 million through volunteer services to improve public lands across the country. Seven federal agencies, as well as nonprofit organizations and state, regional, and local governments, participate in this event. It's certainly worth recognizing anywhere we have public lands, but it's not something that's pushed as much across parts of rural Alaska due to the difficult nature in actually getting out onto some of those lands, such as Togiak Refuge. Still, we'd like to recognize the tremendous value this day has for public lands across our country. So, there you have it. Two worthy events, a single Saturday in September. To recognize these two events, Togiak Refuge is having an open house, Saturday the 26th, at the Refuge Office Building, which is located above the Bayside Diner in downtown Dillingham. If you're in Dillingham, we'll be open to the public from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We'll have a campfire, hot dogs for you to cook, coffee available, and possibly some other drinks and snacks as well. We'll also have a number of demonstrations and activities. While the list isn't finalized yet, we're planning to have demonstrations that show how to set a trap, reload a rifle cartridge, make sausage out of your moose or caribou, and stay safe in bear country. We'll also have a fish pond kind of thing for the younger kids, an archery caribou shoot, a craft table to make a salmon egg bracelet, and a place for you to try your hand at starting a fire without matches. And everything is absolutely free. So again, if you're in town Saturday, stop by and say hello. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon, Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.